Hi, this is Jerry Pippin inviting you to join me and Nancy Wallace in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Friday, August 10th at the Albuquerque Marriott for the opening of the second annual Wake Up Now Conference. From the 10-minute opening guided meditation to the closing event on Sunday, you will be treated to a journey into awareness that you will treasure for the rest of your life. 60 vendor spaces. 12 major speakers, including Bill Murphy, Brooks Agnew, David Weatherly, Lynn Buchanan, Nick Redfern, and Patty Greer in person, plus a screening of her latest film. Check out all the information by entering Wake Up Now Conference in your search engine or go to the banners on our website at jerrypippin.com. This is a benefit for the Pace Setting School of Now. We'll see you in Albuquerque.
Jerry Pippin!
These are unidentified flying objects. Are they proof that we are being visited by civilizations from other stars? Or just what are they?
For the old-timers in the audience, you may remember that television show, Project UFO, and that was the late, great Jack Webb talking about whether or not UFOs really existed or not. And we have a fellow with us that I've admired for a long time. I always look forward to his interviews. With us on the show is Stan Gordon up in Pennsylvania. And Stan's been at this about as long as me. And he's younger than me, so that means he started younger. How old were you, Stan, when you first started getting interested in UFOs? And welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me back, Jerry. I was 10 years old a long time ago, back in 1959.
See, that's a heck of a lot younger than I am. I was 14 or 15 when I started in radio, but you got 5 years head start on me.
There you go. Well, how I got involved, and I guess my parents had no idea that by giving me that birthday gift back at my 10th birthday during the Halloween season, give me a new AM radio, and I was tuning around the AM radio dial that night, and there were some radio shows talking about strange, unusual events, haunted houses and flying saucers and a lot of strange things. And I was curious when I was 10 years old, and I wanted to know if these stories were true or people were making these stories up. So I began to go to the local library and read all the books they had on the subject and began to clip articles out of the newspaper, make scrapbooks. If something appeared in the local paper where somebody claimed to have seen something unusual, I called them on the telephone and talked to them about it, and I kept records of it. And I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, about 12 miles from my hometown of Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And I was not there that night, but I got involved in the incident immediately. And that night I was tuning into KDK Radio in Pittsburgh because they had a talk radio show called Contact, and the host of the show, his name was Mike Levine. His guest that night was Frank Edwards, who had written some books on strange and unusual happenings, so I was tuned into the radio show. But pretty much the entire program was being focused on these reports of this UFO sighting that happened late that afternoon over a widespread area, including the greater Pittsburgh area, where they were reading the Wire news story coming across the Wire. They were interviewing witnesses. And it was at that point that it really got my interest, and I began to investigate the case from that moment.
Yeah, now Kecksburg, they're having, how many years have they had this anniversary celebration in Kecksburg?
Well, this is the seventh annual Kecksburg UFO Festival, and it's going to be coming up this weekend, which is July 28th and 29th. It's held out in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, out in Mount Pleasant Township, which is between Greensburg and Mount Pleasant. And you can get on my website, stangordon.info, for more information on it. But it's a two-day event, and it's very interesting because they have a lot of very unique, different type of all kind of special events going on there. They have a parade, and they have a classic car show, and they have their famous burnout contest and out-of-this-world UFO hot dog eating contest on Sunday. And then also from 1:30 to 5, we have a free conference. It's called this year the Mysterious Pennsylvania UFO and Creature Encounters Conference. And there'll be myself and three other speakers, and it's free to the public. And so all of this is held on the grounds at the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department, who are sponsoring it. But historically, a number of the original Kecksburg firemen, which unfortunately the majority of them now are deceased, were involved in the operation that night, which involved the area being cordoned off and the military coming in and searching for this unidentified flying object. And,
let's talk a little bit for people who don't know about Kecksburg. A lot of people do, but not everyone does. You kind of alluded to it. It was covered pretty heavily by local radio back in those days. Tell our audience exactly what happened.
Well, we could spend days talking about Kecksburg just briefly. Late afternoon, December 9th, 1965. It's about 4:47 in the afternoon. It's just about getting dark. And reports came in initially from the tip of Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And initially, as I'm listening to the radio that night on KDK Radio in Pittsburgh, and they're talking about this, well, this became the major news story all over the greater Pittsburgh area that evening. And it's being broadcast on local radio and TV. And I can remember on KDK TV, the late Bill Burns was breaking in with live reports that the military was now coming into the Kecksburg area to search for the unidentified flying object that reportedly fell in the woods near there. And it was a very, very intriguing night. I wasn't even old. I wasn't driving yet, so I had no way to get out there. But I was running back and forth between the TV and the radio trying to get all the latest details. And then I was very anxious to see if it would be in the newspaper the next day. And it was the headlines in all the local and Pittsburgh area newspapers. It was making the national news wires. And it was quite an interesting event. But I'm looking at the local paper, the Greensburg Tribune Review, and they had two editions. And the morning edition has a headline, Army Ropes Off Area, Unidentified Flying Object Falls Near Kecksburg. And the later edition has a number of different stories, including one which goes on to say that searches fail to find object. And the story goes on to say that, yeah, there was a search, and they had looked around, but nothing was in the woods, and apparently people had been mistaken. The official explanation was that people had seen a bright meteor in the sky, and that was the end of the story. And there was so much we didn't know at that time that I've learned over all these years now since that case. I've been investigating it ever since that night. I'm still, on occasion, getting even some recent reports from people who had never come forward before, people mainly who were out of Kecksburg that night. Most of them were kids or teenagers at that time, but have observed, of course, the military presence out there. And interesting story.
I was heard the story that one of the officers jumped up on top of this thing and started beating it with a club or something, and the door opened. Did that happen?
There's a lot. Let me give you some basics on that. That's something we found in more recent years. Okay. Here's what we now know. Okay. What we now know is as this thing is coming in over the greater Pittsburgh area, okay, it's moving out over toward the Greensburg area, out towards Westmoreland County. And as people are watching this thing, it's coming in and it makes a turn it's moving roughly towards the east, but it makes a turn to the south. And it's observed sequentially by a lot of people in these little communities, these rural communities, as it's moving out towards the mountains, out towards Laurelville. So what we now know is that this thing is moving relatively slowly, especially when several miles before it fell. It's changing direction along its path. And what people who saw it go down into the woods said, it didn't come down at a high rate of speed like a crash as such, but it made almost like a controlled landing. And moments after it fell, there was kind of a bluish-grayish smoke that came up, which dissipated very, very quickly. Now, what we didn't know at that time, which we now know, is that apparently a number of independent local people and kids ran down into the woods afterwards to see what this thing was. And what we know is that different people independently during the afternoon and evening, before the military got there, they came across this large metallic acorn-shaped object that's semi-buried in the ground. Now, we didn't know about an actual eyewitness. I mean, we have heard a lot of stories over the years, but many, many people kept quiet. And in fact, of the hundreds of people I've interviewed, even today, the high percentage of those people still have never gone public. And a lot of those people back then were children or teenagers, and many of them grew up to be very responsible people. They turned out to be police officers, CEOs, teachers, engineers, all kind of responsible people. And because of their position, reputation, a lot of them still don't want to go public today. But it's amazing how their accounts they provided to me and the little details, so many of them confirm other people's accounts that they wouldn't know unless they were there. But anyhow, it wasn't until 1987 when I was holding a very big display at the local mall on UFOs to educate the public that something happened. It was very interesting. We had a small display on Kecksburg there. We didn't have a lot of information on it at that time. And I was out for a sandwich. I guess one of my associates was there, and a man and he were talking about Kecksburg around this little display. And a man and his family happened to walk by, and they kind of listened in for a minute, and he said, "Excuse me, you're talking about that incident out in Kecksburg?" And they said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I was on the search team that found the object." So, of course, they pulled him aside, got a hold of me, and the guy said to me right away, "Well, look," he said, I'll talk to you about it, but I don't want to get involved. I don't want my family involved." But he offered to meet with us at a further time and discuss it. And that turned out to be Jim Romanski, who never went public until we did the Unsolved Mysteries special on the case in 1990. And Jim was not from Kecksburg. But what he told us was, and fit in with other information we got from others, was that he was a member of one of the Voltaire fire departments not too far away that was activated to come out late that afternoon to the Kecksburg area to search for a possible downed aircraft. And so he and a few of the guys got in one of their vehicles, and they got out there, and there were other firemen which they didn't know, and they were setting up this grid search in this large wooded area to search what they thought was a downed aircraft. And he didn't know the area, but he remembered them putting them to different trucks and letting them off in different locations to go up to search through the woods, and they had walkie-talkies with them. And he said they were moving around through the woods, and they were in there for a short time when a call came over the radio that the other team had come across the object. So they hurried over. They weren't too far away, over towards this farm. And anyhow, they're looking at this thing, and they're standing on a little embankment looking down, and here's this thing semi-buried in the ground just a few feet away. Well, they realized what they're looking at was unlike any kind of aircraft they had ever seen. It was no meteorite. It was constructed and built by somebody. But what Jim Romanski told me, and Jim had been a machinist all his life, and he told me, he said, it was a very unusual off-gold color, a very unusual metal. And he said the best way to describe it was it looked like somebody took liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold. He said it was one solid piece of metal, probably 10, 12 feet or more in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. But he said there's no apparent weld marks or rivets or fuselage. And he saw no way in or out from what he could see. But he said at the bottom, the raised up back of like the acorn on that he called the bumper area, there was these raised up markings that he said looked more like symbols than writing. And luckily, because of his family background, he was somewhat familiar with Russian Cyrillic, and he said that's not what it was. He said these were like symbols, and over the years after it happened, he spent a lot of time in the libraries looking at ancient writings, and he said closest thing he could remember would look similar to ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. So what Jim goes on to tell us is this small group of guys are standing there scratching their heads trying to figure out what this thing is when two men come down in like trench coats. They had a little yellow box with them, which we believe was a little yellow 70-cent Geiger counter, and they tell these fellows, you got to get out of here right away. This area is now quarantined, and right behind them are soldiers coming down through the woods. And so they found their way back to this little village of Kecksburg. When they got back there was soldiers back there at the Kecksburg Fire Department truck station, and there were military vehicles around. And so that was that one part of the story. The interesting thing is, a year later, 1988, we get a tip that there's another local man who had gotten down there soon after the object fell, and he had never come forward, as so many people didn't on their own, because quite often we got leads like from friends and neighbors and relatives. And we followed up on it, and he verified it. Yes, he got involved in this thing. He was there right after it fell, but after the next day when the newspapers and the government said there was nothing there, you know, he just kept his mouth shut. He told a few, you know, some relatives and people close to him, and that was it. But that was Bill Bullybush. And Bill lived down the road in the little village of Mammoth, right below Kecksburg, and he was out there that afternoon tuning in his CB radio in his car, and he happened to look up and saw this fiery object coming from the little village of Norvelt, moving out towards the mountains of Laurelville. So he ran out on the road to look at this thing, and he said, out towards the mountains, it looked like it kind of stopped or hesitated, made a turn, and began to come back towards Kecksburg. So he jumps in his old little Corvair and goes up to the top of the hill, which is now called Meteor Road, which overlooks the whole area. It's a very high lookout. And down in that area is this large wooded area, which he hunted in, so he knew the area pretty well. And it's almost dark. And he sees what looks like blue arcing down there. He said it looked like kids playing like with sparklers. And he figured, like, you know, what's going on down there? Whatever it is, it's pretty unusual. So he grabs his flashlight and started to make his way down through the woods. Now, one thing I should go back and tell you a little bit of the story. Well, after we talked to Jim Romanski, he again was not from Kecksburg, but he offered to go out to us to the Kecksburg area to see if he could find the location. He hadn't been there since 1965. This is now 1987. My associate and I, we told him absolutely nothing. And one thing we did not tell him was that quite a long time prior to that, we had gotten more information, we had made a lot more thorough search of that wooded area, and we found what appeared to be a trajectory, where we found from where the wood line came into the woods down to the bottom of the ravine, we found a pattern of tree damage, where trees were knocked down the same direction, the tops of trees were broken out. There appeared to be a pattern of a possible trajectory, and we got a pretty good idea where we felt something may have come down, but we didn't tell him a thing. So we're walking out there for quite a while, and he's trying to remember from that night. There were certain details of landmarks, certain things he still recalled. And he walked around there for quite a while, and he said, you know what, fellas, I think we're right on the spot. And my assistant and I, we looked at each other because we were amazed because it was right in that immediate area where we thought this thing probably came down. So anyhow, we had that pretty good location. So when Bill Bullybush takes us out the next year, and, of course, he didn't know this other fellow, Jim, until when we were filming the Unsolved Mystery Show in 1990. He took us down from the way of the opposite side of the woods, from the top of Media Road, where he was that night, that afternoon, I should say. And we walked the whole way down through the woods, all through that area, went to the opposite side. And he took us over to a particular tree, and he said, I stood right behind this tree, and he pointed over and said, that's where the object was, and was the exact place that Jim took us to the year before.
Wow.
Yes. And then others have independently also done the same thing. We know of others now, some deceased, some who were alive, who went down and found the object as well. Anyhow, just to make the story short, hundreds of people that night descended on the Kecksburg area after it was coming out on the news. And what's so interesting is you had hundreds of people that started coming in from all over western Pennsylvania to try to get a look at this thing. This was this little narrow country road. Hundreds of people on this little road were parking. They had picnic baskets. We had reports, people all over the place trying to look at this thing. But what they didn't know was that it fell way on the opposite side down in the ravine, and they couldn't possibly see it from there. Later that night, the roads were being blocked off by the authorities. They did see some military around there, but most of the military was way down on the opposite side of the woods, closer to where it fell. And that's where a lot of really interesting stories came to our attention. And different people have come forward publicly and have told us that that night, a lot of these were teenagers who tried to sneak down this large wooded area to try to get down to the impact area, and they were stopped by armed military personnel. But some of these people have come forward publicly and stated that soldiers aimed their weapons at them to prevent them from going any further to try to take a look at this thing. So what was so important down there that they didn't want people to find out about? So once again, you had not only the public, but all the news, the major news media had representatives there from all over the Pittsburgh area. You had the major TV stations, radio, and newspaper reporters all on the scene. And I interviewed many of those reporters. Some of those guys are now deceased, but they observed the military presence, the military vehicles or personnel. some interacted with him, like Bob Gatty, who was a reporter for the Tribune Review. He was convinced there was something down in the woods, and he wanted to go down. And when he tried to go down, they stopped him, and he said, well, what if I get down? He said, you'll be arrested. And so all kind of neat stories. But in the summer of 1990, before we did the Unsolved Mystery Show, a fella contacted me, and he had quite a background, which we were able to check out and confirm. But he told me, he said, I was on the Air Force security team, the Air Force security police, that guarded the object when it came in to Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, on the morning of December 10th, the next morning, during the early morning hours. He said they were notified this thing had been recovered in Pennsylvania. It was coming into the base. They brought it in from an entrance they generally don't use, and another person has confirmed that as well. And he said it was very interesting because they backed his flatbed truck with this tarped object into a hangar. And he said the security on the base was even higher than when President Kennedy had visited the base prior to that, and they were given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody approached the hangar without proper authorization. He went on to tell me he wasn't on the team that long, but he heard that it left over in a short time, and it continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Fairborn, Ohio, which others have verified to us that, yes, it went to Wright-Patterson, and we even know exactly what building it went to, and it wasn't the famous Hangar 18. It was another building. Now, where it's at today, of course, we really have no idea. But that's just a general scenario. There's so much to the story, and it's fascinating, regardless of what this thing may have been.
Now when you talk on Sunday about this, I say I have somebody here that just Twittered me, and they want to know where Kecksburg is exactly.
Kecksburg is about 40 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you go to my website, there's links over to the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department, kecksburgvfd.com, I believe it is, but there's a link over there. It's the best way to get there. It's a Mount Pleasant Township, so you can come off the turnpike, get into Mount Pleasant, go through there, or the easiest way I find is go into Greensburg, take the Greensburg-Mount Pleasant Road into the little village of Norvelt. And when you come to the three-way stop sign at the little grocery store there, make a left. You're on the Kecksburg Road. Just follow that right in. It'll take you right into the village of Kecksburg. And it's a two-day event that actually technically starts with a parade at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Then they have events going on all night till 10 o'clock. And then it starts again on Sunday with the 1 o'clock Out of This World UFO Hot Dog Eating Contest. I believe they have the big car show that day. And we have the Kecksburg, we have the conference, the free conference from 1:30 to 5, and they have a nice area set up now, a nice building where we can have our talks, and it's a lot more room we had before. And there's going to be a lot of UFO researchers having displays there as well.
And you know, this story is, you've been living with it for decades now, but it makes you wonder. Didn't they try to say it was a Russian satellite at one time?
Well, there's been many, many different theories that have been proposed.
I mean, there's no shortage of cover-up stories.
Well, there's all kinds of stories. And, I mean, the official government explanation next day was it was just a meteor, that nothing was found at all. I mean, there's a great deal of information which highly suggests that the government did recover this thing, and we know where it was taken to.
Yeah.
One of the first theories that came up was Cosmos 96, which was a Soviet Venus probe, which had technical difficulties and re-entered the Earth's atmosphere. Coincidentally, the same date, the same morning, about 3:18 a.m. in the morning, according to the U.S. Space Command in Canada. This happened about 4:47 in the afternoon. And in more recent years, there's been more data on this, which pretty much rules out Cosmos 96 having any connection to this. And there's been many, many theories. I've had numerous people over the years contact me who said that they knew positively what it was. And, of course, when you go down and you try to get some evidence, you know, give me some proof, it all comes down to hearsay. And those range from a Soviet satellite to a Soviet ICBM to a man that told me he knew positively it was some type of projectile that was fired from a giant railroad gun in Canada into the United States. You know, in recent years now, there's TV shows out talking about this alleged Nazi time machine, the bell, that some people try to connect with it. But, yeah, there are so many unanswered questions, and a lot of what we hear out there just doesn't fit with what we know. And whatever the thing was, though, apparently it was great interest to the government and our military for them to respond as quickly as they did.
Have you, in your investigations over the years, run across other government cover-ups there in Pennsylvania on UFO landings?
Oh, you know, I've been, well, Jerry, you know, it'll be 53 years I've been doing this October. And, you know, in all the years I've been doing this, I've never personally seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself. I've interviewed thousands of people. I've seen a lot of evidence over the years, different cases where we are conducting on-scene investigations. I've been out in the field actually doing investigations since 1965 after the Kexburg case, and I've worked on some amazing UFO reports, and there's been some really intriguing cases even in recent days and weeks in Pennsylvania. It goes on constantly, strange creature reports, UFO cases, and there have been some really interesting events and cases. In fact, my two books, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, and Really Mysterious Pennsylvania, they both have cases that I've been involved in over the years, which shows that in some events that there was at least some government interest in whatever was going on with these particular cases. And with the Kexburg case, I have no doubt that there was that the government knows far more about it than they told the public. And there's some very interesting aspects of the case as well. Like I said, we could talk for days and days just about the Kexburg case. And the Bigfoot phenomenon is something that's very, very active in Pennsylvania. I have spent years and years investigating hundreds of Bigfoot cases, and, you know, I found some very interesting, very unusual events, especially during that wave of 1973 and 1974, which is my book, Silent Invasion, focuses on, with some of the strangest cases on record we documented when they were occurring at that time.
Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, back in 1973, and you'll remember 1973 was the last major, really national wave of UFO case in the United States. When in the fall of that year, we had a huge outbreak of UFO incidents. It was making the evening news and making the front page of newspapers for many, many days. But back here in Pennsylvania, it started the first day of the year and continued to the last day of the year with hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases being reported. And of course, you know, I'll tell you this, because it started from the time I started investigating up to the present, many UFO cases, in fact, probably the majority of UFO cases and other unusual incidents we investigate, they may seem strange and unusual initially, but when you investigate, most of them determine to be either natural or man-made in origin. However, year after year, events occur that you cannot easily dismiss. And once again, we've had some really intriguing cases even this year. But back to 1973, we had so many cases going on, and many of these were not just lights in the sky, but many of these were low-level sightings, what appeared to be physical craft, pursuing cars, hovering low over the roads, following cars, landing on different areas, just some really detailed UFO observations, which could not be easily thrown out and dismissed. But in the summer of 73, the events began to get much stranger, because we had this massive outbreak of Bigfoot sightings that occurred. It started here in western Pennsylvania, and it went on for weeks and months into 1974 throughout southwestern Pennsylvania, other parts of the state, and including parts of the eastern part of the state as well. It was an incredible time to live through, and luckily, my first research group, which was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group, that was my first volunteer research group that I had set up in 1970. You may know that back in 1969, I set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. So I've had a public hotline since 1969, which I still receive calls today, and, of course, by way of email. And reports come in here constantly of current and past events and people calling in for information. It never ends around here. But anyhow, 1969, when I set up this hotline, I was so overwhelmed within weeks as people began to find out about it, then I realized this was much more than I could do on my own. So I decided I was going to try to form a volunteer research group of scientific people, scientists, engineers, technicians, people who had the background to evaluate these type of events. And it was my idea to set up some type of a quick response unit so we could try to get investigators on the scene while the phenomenon was ongoing or soon after. So everything would be fresh, the information, the evidence would be there, and we could document it. So in 1970, I founded the first group. That was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. And over a period of time, we got quite an interesting group of people. We had some of the top people from Gulf Research, Alcoa, Westinghouse, colleges, and most of these people work with me anonymously because of their positions. And with my electronics background, I set up a quite elaborate communication center in my home. I designed it.
Yeah, you had quite a little radio network that covered the whole state, I think.
Well, the group, that's when things got going, and we started out as a local group, but by 1973, the group became so well-known across the state, and it turned to a point that got quite a level of respectability from the news media and the law enforcement agencies that they were actually contacting us, referring cases to us to investigate. So when this major wave happened in 1973, we had a huge input for information come in from all across the state, from a lot of the police agencies, from the news media, and we're responding to these cases day and night. And at this outbreak with these Bigfoot sightings, it all began locally. I got a call on August 7, 1973, about an incident that happened the week before July 31st. And what happened was this man, it was a warm evening, the man was shaving, cleaning up, getting ready to go to work. He always got up early the next morning, so he shaved the night before. And he was shaving as normal, and all of a sudden began to smell this funny odor. He said it was something like rotten cucumber. And he turned around to look at the window in the bathroom, and here's these two large glowing red eyes staring at him, luminous eyes in a window 8 feet off the ground. So he runs into the other room and calls some of the relatives, and they run in, and whatever was in the window was gone, but they smelled the odor, and they thought it was pretty odd that the dogs weren't barking. And anyhow, the guy had some medical problems, was taken to the hospital, and he was out when I got the call, so I called him that day on August 7th when I had to interview him. And while I'm there, I find out that a number of weeks before, some of the local fellows, the young boys, had decided to take a shortcut over to the local mall, and there was a lot of woods and brush around there at the time. And as they're walking through, they hear this noise, and they figure it's a deer, so they start throwing some rocks in. But instead of a deer coming out, here comes this very tall, large, hairy, bipedal creature with long arms swinging, crossing the road, going up this hill behind this house. So I was able to interview some of those fellas, and I got permission to go up and look around that hill. And we were up there for quite a while looking around. The ground wasn't really good for tracks. But just about ready to leave, I happened to look down, and there on the ground is the strangest footprint I had ever seen. It's 13 inches long, 8 inches wide, and very clearly defined three-toed. And the kids were all amazed, like, what kind of animal makes tracks like that? So I get on the radio, and one of my associates comes out, and we take photographs and measurements, make a cast of the footprint. And we get a radio call that one of our investigators that morning, now this is almost the Ohio line north of Pittsburgh, had been investigating a case that morning where something had looked through a window 9 feet off the ground, and the police had found some strange footprints out there. So these events went on for weeks and months. And many of these creature sightings were sometimes, as you see in Silent Invasion, some of these were multiple sightings on the same day, some almost the same time in widely separated areas, in some cases multiple creature reports, not just one. Many times there was some type of physical evidence at the scene, such as footprints. And probably the most convincing evidence that I saw, and I can tell you some of the police officers saw who investigated some of the cases, something that could not be fabricated were how the animals responded when these creatures were nearby. It was most visible with dogs. Because when these creatures in the distance, the dogs would bark and go crazy and carry on. But when they would get in close range, in most cases, even the most vicious dogs were just like stopped in their tracks. They wouldn't bark. They would shake. They would cower. They'd hide in their pens or anywhere they could. They wouldn't move. They sometimes wouldn't eat right for 2-3 days later. Humans can be fooled. Animals can't. And that was something that was seen not just with dogs, but with like cats and horses and cattle that would do things differently and act differently when these things were around. And it was quite amazing. So anyhow, you know, all these Bigfoot reports are gone for weeks and weeks. And, you know, when I started back in the late 60s, I was investigating these reports of, because I had an interest not just in UFOs, but all these unusual mysteries to try to find out what was going on. And I started hearing, of course, about alleged Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania, which there was a long history from Native American accounts to articles, newspapers going back to the 1800s up to the present. And a lot of people claim we've seen these large, hairy, bipedal creatures, you know, around different parts of the state. And one of the most active areas, which continues to be, is along the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that runs from Preston County, West Virginia, through West Warren, Fayette, Indiana County, in southwest Pennsylvania. So that area along West Warren County, where I'm at, along the area of Derry Township, not far from Latrobe, that whole general area is a very active area, especially Fayette County. Fayette County is a really active area historically for a lot of very strange reports, including recently, and a lot of Bigfoot activity. So anyhow, when I started this back in the early days, I was open-minded to the possibility that if these encounters are really true and there's some kind of a strange animal out there, very probably it's some type of unknown primate. And, of course, that was something that I always kept in the back of my mind. Well, as these events in 73 and the 74 began to unfold more and more, and all these reports are coming in from widespread areas from different people, and a lot of these people initially calling the police, who were just frightened, some very strange cases came to our attention, including cases where both UFOs and Bigfoot were seen together at the same time and place. And, you know, they were amazing cases. I mean, one of the first cases was September 27th, north of Pittsburgh, where two women were waiting outside for a friend in a rural area, and they see this large, hairy, white-covered creature walking towards a wooded area. But it's odd enough to see the creature, but in one of its hands it had a small, luminous globe of light that was luminous, and it ran into the woods. So they went over and got the dad of one of the girls who owned the property. He went down to the woods, and he wasn't down there really that long. And this object comes across the sky and projects a beam of light down on the woods where the creature ran into. And, of course, as you recall, because I'm sure we talked about this before, in this case is probably the classic, and we could talk for hours and hours about this case, and it gets very, very strange. And I detailed a whole thing in the Silent Invasion book, which if people are interested, they can actually pick up copies from my website at stangordon.info or through Amazon as well. But anyhow, on the night of October 25th, 1973. During that 24-hour period that day, there were a lot of UFO cases going on around the state. But I got a call from a state trooper about 10:30 at night from the Uniontown Barracks out in Fayette County. And he had just came back from investigating this incident, which involved a UFO landing with multiple witnesses and two Bigfoot creatures in the field at the same time. And when I talked to him, he was somewhat shaken, I could say. And he said to me, he said he thought there was a good chance that something was still up in the pasture, that he'd like us to get a team up there right away to investigate it. And a key witness was at the barracks as well, so I could talk to him. And there was enough information there to lead me to believe there was something going on. So we did get a team together. We checked our equipment out. It was quite a distance away. We got there in the early morning hours. And basically what we found out was that about 9 o'clock that night, this in this rural community, about 15 people, they're observing from different locations up there this large object about as big as a barn, like a big red sphere, a ball of light, that's about 100 feet off the ground, and it's slowly moving down. And this fella and his wife, happened to be the son of the farmer-owned property up there, this main farm, was coming down the farm road, and he saw it, and he went off to a neighbor's where he get a different perspective of it, and they watched this thing look like it was coming down in his dad's pasture. So he and two local young boys decided they were going to go up to see what was going on. So he took a run over to his dad's farm and grabbed a .30-06, grabbed a handful of ammunition, which included some tracer rounds and also some live ammunition. And in the distance, as they're moving down to the farm road, they hear dogs going crazy in the distance. They hear like baby crying sounds. They hear like a high-pitched sound. And as they're getting closer, the sounds are getting louder. So they make their way up to the top of the pasture. And as they do, they're quite startled because here's this object that appears to be right on the ground or just above it. And now it's not a whole sphere. It's like half a hemisphere. It's bright white with the bottom flat towards the ground. It's illuminating the whole field, the whole area. It's making this high-pitched sound. They estimate this thing's at least about 100 feet in diameter. and they're just standing there in amazement, can't believe what they're seeing. So they're watching this thing and trying to figure out what this thing is, and their attention's drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. And there's two figures walking along that fence in their direction. And, of course, their first thought was, well, they've got to be bears. And then the look at these things, they realize, well, these things are, one's about 8 foot tall, the other's about 7 foot tall. The largest one's in front. And they're walking one behind the other along the fence line, along the fence post. They're covered with long, dark, matted hair. They have glowing green eyes. They're making a baby, like a crying, whining sound. The arms are down almost to the ground. They have there's a funny smell in the air like burning rubber, and they just can't believe what they're seeing. Well, as these things are walking slowly in their direction, one of the boys at that point gets pretty upset, and he runs out of the field. And the other guy's yelling to the fella, shoot him, shoot him. So the farmer fires, and the first shot is a tracer, so you just got the instantaneous flash. And he fires the second tracer, and when he fires that second tracer, the largest of the two creatures reaches out as to grab that tracer. And the moment it does that, it leaves out this whining sound, and the object in the field vanishes. Now, it doesn't lift off the ground. It just disappears. The light goes out. The sound it's making is gone. It's just gone. And the two creatures turn around and start walking back along the fence line towards the woods. So at that point, he starts shooting at these things with live ammo. And this guy's been hunting for years. And he said he remembers how he's shooting into these things. He said, I know I hit that bigger one. I said, I had to hit that bigger one. And it just kept staring at him with those glowing green eyes just staring at him. And finally they ran out of there. And they ran back to the farmhouse and told him what happened. And they got the family out of there, took him to a neighbor's, and they called the state police. So when the trooper arrives about 45 minutes later, he said, I'm here to investigate the report. And the witness says, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And the trooper says, we had a report of two similar things, beasts up on the mountain the night before. I have to go investigate. So they go in the troop car, and they go up into the pasture. And what the trooper tells me was, over the area where the object had been on the ground, the whole area was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 to 150 feet in diameter. The animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. He said it seemed like the temperature was a little warm inside of it. He said it was bright enough that if he had a newspaper, he could have sat down and read the newspaper from the light coming off that area. And the story goes on and on. It gets stranger and stranger. And like I said, we could talk for hours about it. And yeah. They go back to the barracks. The trooper and the witness are taken to two separate rooms and questioned. And then they call me at that point, and that's when we get our team to go up there. And the story gets stranger and stranger, but very, very interesting story. And,
yes,
you know,
maybe these creatures are interdimensional.
Well, you know, more and more cases that I had, you know, during these events of 73, that's what I talk about in the book, we had instances where our teams were out there, and we have trails of footprints that just suddenly stopped and vanished when it should have been more tracks. Okay.
We're talking with Stan Gordon here, and our time's almost up, but you're going to be at Kecksburg this Sunday.
That is right. I'll be there both days, all day long, but I'll be there for the conference. I'll be speaking along with John Ventry, the MUFON State Director, Eric Altman, Director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, and Dave Dragason, who's also involved with Bigfoot research. And the conference is 1:30 to 5. It is free. There's a lot of fun events all day long. There's a lot of good food out there. They can go to my website, stangordon.info. And also I want to mention, October 13th and 14th, we have the 2012 Pittsburgh MUFON UFO Conference at Westmoreland County Community College. I'll be speaking there with a lot of other people coming in, and there's details on my website as well.
Speaking of your website, I got somebody here in the chat room that wants to know if you have a sketch of those hieroglyphics or whatever it is that was on the side of that Kecksburg thing. Do you have any of those symbols or anything?
Actually, if you go to my website and click on under Kecksburg, okay, there's a drawing there by artist Dave Sankey, and there's an area there where it shows those are probably the closest, and we can't say 100%, but according to Jim Romanski from years and years ago when we first talked to him, the best that he can remember from memory, that's the closest he can recall of what he believed they look like. So that's the best we can come up with, and it's on the website under Kecksburg.
There's a story about the Lady in White and the Lehigh River. Have you ever heard of that?
You talking about the apparition?
Yeah. I'm not quite. Yeah, I guess so.
I've heard. You know, I'm interested in hauntings and ghosts, and I get calls on them occasionally. But there are so many people in the state that deal with that type of thing, and there are lots of reports from a lot of parks and a lot of forest areas of Pennsylvania where people claim to have seen, you know, different type of apparitions and ghosts of, of young ladies and whatever. So I don't know any particular one, but there's also been a lot of reports of very strange creature sightings. So if you get on my website, some very interesting stories on there.
Okay, Stan, we'll talk again soon. We're about out of time. I appreciate
it. Okay, thanks, Jerry, for having me on.
And those books, give those book titles again.
The latest book is Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. It's got a lot of really unusual stories in it and really mysterious Pennsylvania as well.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me on.